Hi, everyone. Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Hasi Bai.
Hello.
And today our special guest is Ross Gardler. Hello, Ross. Welcome.
Hi.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're here to talk about?
Yeah, sure. My name is Ross Gardler. I work for the Azure Compute team. I work on Linux in the Compute team, and specifically, I work on the Azure Container Service, and that's what I want to demo a bit today.
Great. Well, we're going to skip past the news today and go right into this presentation.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to assume that there are people out there who don't really know a great deal about Docker. So I'm going to start off with a kind of 101 on what Docker is.
Sure,
cool.
And I'm going to talk about, you know, how fast can we start up 20 web servers on my little laptop here using Docker. But we'll build up to that. And then after that first demo, I'll start talking about the development cycle and then the container service and how that can help.
All
so
right, great.
Let's take a look at what Docker is. So I'm going to switch over here to my Linux machine. So I'm going to switch over to my Linux machine. On here, I have Docker pre-installed, so I can do things like run Docker PS, and that'll tell me what processes are currently running under Docker on this laptop machine. And you can see that there aren't any processes running. So let's run a process. We'll do Docker run, and we'll just do the age-old classic of hello world, but we'll spell it right. Thanks for spotting that.
Hello.
Well, I'm English, you know.
It's true.
So what's happening here, and I'll scroll back in a moment to show you what happens, because it will scroll off the screen in a moment. But what's happening is we're saying that we're trying to run this hello world container. It's looking and saying, well, it isn't working. It isn't here locally. I don't have it on this machine at the moment. So it's going to go to a place called the Docker Hub, where you can publish all of these containers. And it'll pull the container down and then run it locally. So it was a little slower than usual pulling down, but it has pulled down and it's now run it. If I scroll back in the history here, you'll be able to see what happened. So Docker run hello world is the command I ran, and it said, well, I'm unable to find that container locally, so I'm going to pull it from the Docker Hub where you can find these publicly available containers. It pulled it down, it checked that it was the right one, ran a hash against it, and then it actually executed the application that's contained within that container. And that starts here at the top. It says, hello from Docker. Mm-hmm. That's the actual application in the hello world, and it says hello world. Mm.
So the output you see here from the hello world is from the container.
That's
not from your host.
Absolutely. That came from the container, which was running on this machine.
Yep.
Now, if you don't know what that means, how it's run, et cetera, the next slide that I'll show in a moment will show you. I just want to show the speed that we can work with containers and why we want to know the rest of the information. Mm-hmm. So that's all right, but we still, if I do a Docker PS, we still have nothing running because that container started up, ran its application, and stopped. Okay. So let's do something a little more interesting. Let's do Docker run. We're going to run in detached mode because I want to be able to come back. This is a long running process and I want to be able to come back to the command line. I'm going to expose port 80 in the container to port 80 on this machine.
Mm.
So that'll mean I'm going to have a web server in there. You can probably guess that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to use a container from a publisher called Tutum, and it's another Hello World container. So I'm going to run that. Again, it can't find the image locally, so it's going to pull it down. Pulls down, this is more like the speed that we would normally see it pulling down. It pulls it down, but this time it's not pulling a tiny little container with a Hello World script. It's pulling down a full web browser and an application, etc. We are, in fact, going very slow. Normally, this takes just a couple of seconds to pull down the whole image. So that's the network in here is probably not as good as it is at in my office.
It's a very shielded container in here, you know, bomb-proof and all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two is down.
It's right there.
Yeah. Well, I don't do any more pulling after this. Okay. So there we go. We have the container is run down, pulled down. And it's been run. If I do Docker PS, you can see that it's now running.
Mm.
Okay, the line wraps is a little difficult to read because it's wrapping on this large text. But you can see we have the Tutum Hello World. We're exposing port 80 on the container to port 80 on this VM. And it's running this PHP application on there. So if I switch out to a browser and I look at localhost port 80, there's my application.
Cool.
Great.
Mm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So how many web servers can I run on this machine, or how fast can I start them up? You want to take any bets while I type in this command?
Hasi, you know more
about
this than
I do. Come on, you just mentioned 20. So I guess you can run 20.
How long, though? How
long? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if I was starting up 20 VMs, how long do you think that would take us?
Well, that would take at least 45 to an hour.
Yeah, at least, I would say.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do these in serial, not in parallel. So.
Okay. That would take even longer.
It will take even longer. So I'm going to run them in detach mode again. I'm going to expose port 80. This time I'm not going to tell it to map it to port 80 on my VM, because obviously I can only map one process to port 80 at a time. So Docker will just assign a port to it for us. And then we do Docker tutum hello world, and then done. So this is just bash for running that command 20 times. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's the same command essentially as we ran before. Although I've mistyped it in some way.
Was it underscore hello or hello underscore world?
No, it is dash. That one's correct. Tutum hello world. Done.
Oh, you're missing run.
Oh, I'm missing run. Yes. Well spotted. Thank you. So I should run them, and here we go. Each one of those lines is one new web server starting up. So a lot less than 40 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour, whatever.
Pretty fast.
It is pretty fast. And if I do Docker PS now, you can see I have 20 running, or you would be able to see if you saw the whole output. Here you can see that we're mapping random, semi-random ports to the each individual container. So we can put a load balancer in front of this, and we can load balance. I don't have a load balancer running here. But just to prove it actually works, let's go look at one of those, 32810. Note the host name, which is a randomly generated string for the each container. So it changes. I'll go to 81. And we get a different host, and we could go through all 20.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then stopping. What this command will do is it'll take just the ID of each container, that's the DS, Docker PS minus Q, feed it into the Docker stop command, and each time you see a line, that's a server shutting down.
Mm.
Okay, and so now we have nothing running on this machine again.
Yeah. Great. So in just a few seconds, you launched 20 web servers, then you shut it down.
Yeah, that's it. In just a few seconds, and that could that couldn't happen in real time. And we'll see later on. We'll do a demo of scaling up and scaling down in real time for workloads.
Great.
Cool.
So exactly, what is a container? You know, it's great. We can stand them up and down. We can do all this kind of thing really easily. So what does a container actually look like? So this slide gives us an idea of what the container looks like. On the left-hand side, this is a virtual machine. Mm. So you have your server at the bottom, you have your host OS, and then you have your hypervisor, and then your guest operating system, various libraries and binaries and so on, and finally your application.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a whole computer essentially running on top of your hypervisor. It's very large, it's very bloated, takes a long time to start up, certainly not as fast as we were doing there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get a massive amount of density. You can certainly get more density than just one machine, but you'll be limited because you've got a whole guest operating system coming with you.
Mm-hmm.
The diagram on the right is how it works with containers. So you have your server, you have your host OS, but instead of your hypervisor, you have an engine. In this case, we're using the Docker engine. On top of that, you can share binaries and libraries across your different applications. So there's one space saving, sharing the binaries and libraries. And then you have your application on top of that. So it's much smaller, it's much lighter weight, much faster to start up, to stop, etc. You get much more density. The downside, or one of the main downsides, is isolation. So in a hypervisor world, you've got full isolation between each of those individual machines.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas in containers, you don't. They reach down into the host OS. And so they're not isolated from one another entirely.
And now, does that refer to basically what resources they can access, like file I/O, and then also, you know, CPU, memory, all that?
Absolutely. So they obviously use CPU and I/O, etc. The containers are self-contained in terms of the storage that they have, but of course it has to be actually physically stored somewhere. So yes, it's on the file system of the host in many cases, although you have the opportunity to mount remote volumes and things like that. All the usual bells and whistles that you would expect.
Yeah, in my understanding, the control container isolation is done by the Linux namespaces and C groups. So basically you have your own virtualized file system, if you will.
That's right.
And the C groups controls what percentage of resources you can consume on that host.
That's absolutely right. And the way we were running the containers there, we weren't specifying how much resource we wanted for each container. But you'll see later on when you start using orchestration and scheduling, you can start to define how much of each resource you want the container to have.
Okay.
Cool.
So for the rest of these demos, we're going to work through a single application. And it's basically a very simple event logging and processing application. So we'll have one or more event producers. So it'll just create events. It's simulating kind of a thermostat thing, increasing the temperature and decreasing it and so on. And each time it changes the temperature, it sends out a log event for that. We're going to write those into a queue. They're then going to have a consumer, and the consumer will pull the things out of the queue, process them. In this case, it's just going to count how many different types of message there are, and then it's going to write the results of that into a summary table, in this case, in a key value store.
Okay.
So the key thing about containers is that you're not confined by any particular language. You use whatever language you want within your container. So you leverage the skills that you have internally, and you're not constrained with the frameworks that you want to use, etc. Equally, in terms of the queue in this use case, you're not limited to any particular queue. You can choose whatever you want to choose. You can have any queue running in a container, or you could use a hosted queue or any such service. And same thing with your tables in this case. Mm. So in our demo, what we're doing is we're going to use Python for the programming language. I'm actually going to use the Azure Storage Queue and the Azure Tables. That's just because it's convenient. It's very easy to do, and I have to write the demos, so anything that's quick and easy is good. But I could easily replace the Azure Storage Queue with, let's say, RabbitMQ in a container rather than using a provided service. And the fact that we're using the Azure Storage Queue doesn't mean that you have to run it in Azure. You'll see me running it both on this laptop and in Azure, but it could run anywhere where Docker containers can run. So let's switch over to the demo machine again, and we'll do another demo here. So the first thing I want to do is show you that simulation container running. So Docker run, same as before. rgardler simulate is the name of the container that I've got. I've already built it. It's already on this machine to save time, so it just starts out. And you can see what it's doing here. I've got it echoing out to the screen here so we can see it. But those entries have gone into the queue now. Just out of interest as well, I also write them out to Slack. So you can see this is the current time here, and we're attempting to simulate five actions. We successfully simulated five actions. So you can do integration with tooling like Slack. It's just a programming trick. It's not specific to containers. Just illustrating that you can plug different things together. Yep. So those items have now gone into the queue. How did that happen? What actually went on there? And how would a developer actually work with this? So this is our directory where all of these containers live. The analyze logs is the analyzer we talked about. The CLI is something I'll use in a moment just for convenience. But if I scroll down, simulated logging is the one that we want. So let's look at the source code and actually make an edit. So we're a developer right now, and we're going to make an edit to this container. We won't go through the code. It's just Python code that simulates stuff. And you can see I already have the text in here saying that Cloud Cover is attempting to simulate. I forgot before we came in to actually remove that. The version that we're using doesn't use that Cloud Cover. So you can see that it isn't there. But just to prove I'm not cheating, just to prove I'm not cheating, I'll put the word really in there.
We're really
attempting to do this. So I've saved that now. I've made my edit. And I obviously want to test it because I'm a good developer. So what I need to do is I need to be able to build this container with that new code in it. And the way you do that is through what's called a Docker file. And the Docker file describes the container. And a container is made up of different layers. Each line in the Docker file here describes a layer. So the first layer is I'm saying from this rgardler ATS logging test base image, build on top of that. And we'll go back to what the base image is in a moment. Pip install is a Python package installer. So it just installs a requirement for this application. It copies the source code into the container. So it copies the directory source here into a directory called source on the container. And then when you run the container, it runs this command. It runs Python with the parameter source simulated logs. Okay. Very, very simple.
Okay. So you can take any image as your starting point, right? In this case, I guess your base image already has Python installed.
Yeah.
So in this case, you just need to put in the additional package.
That's right. So I can show you the Docker file for the base image, which is this one, and that's exactly what you see there. It says from Python.
I see.
And Python is provided by the Docker Hub as a ready-made Python environment that you can build your applications on top of. So I've not had to figure out how I want to configure Python and install Python. I can just say, use Python, and I get it. That gets updated for me as Python gets new releases out, etc. I could, of course, build that myself from scratch, from my preference of Linux distribution.
Right.
And then this does exactly the same thing. It runs some requirements that are shared across each of my application. That's what the pip install does here. And then it copies the source, which is the shared source for the different applications. Okay, so I've not changed the base image in this, so I don't need to rebuild the base image. But I do need to build the one that I just edited. So minus T tells me the tag that I want to give it, so that's essentially the name that I'm going to use. Mm-hmm. And then I want it to build the container described in the Docker file that's in the simulated logging folder.
Which is the one you just edited.
Which is the one I just edited. And that's it, it's built. Mm. Well, so you asked me that question, it built.
That's quick.
Fantastic.
Yes.
How's it so quick? Well, it uses the cache. So we didn't change the base image, so it didn't need to do anything for step one. Mm-hmm. We didn't change the install requirements, the pip command, so it used the cache thing there as well. We did change the source folder, so it needed to copy the new source in. Mm-hmm. And then anything after that, obviously the container layers have changed, so it had to regenerate this last one as well.
Whoops. I see.
So that's it. It's rebuilt. Mm. So now I can do the Docker run. And hopefully, it really says that we are doing this live. There we go.
I see it.
Cloud Cover is really attempting to simulate. Mm-hmm. And just to prove that I'm really not fudging it, you can see that in Slack, it is also saying Cloud Cover.
Very cool. Nice.
So that's the kind of typical developer workthrough.
Sure.
It's really, really quick, really easy to go through that process. I was manually building the container here. Of course, I could have a CI/CD system, and if we have time, we'll have a look at that later on as well. But there are some videos online if we don't get time to do that. But what we are doing there is only working on our single machine. We're not working on a remote machine. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is share containers between ourselves. So if we were each building one of these components, you now have access to my container. I could push that up into my registry and you would have direct access to it. Mm-hmm. And what that means is ultimately that I can
switch back.
It's okay, I'm just going to skip that slide. It's not an important one, so I'll go straight into the next part of the demo, which is the analyzing the logs.
Okay.
So let's imagine that that one of you two is the wonderful developer on the analyzer.
You had to take that job, actually, I think.
Sure. Are you not a wonderful developer?
Well, I mean, just not wanting to work on the logs.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So we're going to run the analyze container now. And the analyze container will just go see what's in the queue, process it, count it up, put a message into Slack as well, so put the summary eventually into the key value store, the table that we're using to store that data. So it's gone through everything in the queue.
So in your diagram earlier, this is the consumer.
This is the consumer. That's correct. Yes. So I also mentioned that we had a CLI. The CLI is just a convenience, so we can see what's actually going on. So you must be building the CLI. So the CLI just gives us some utilities. So we can say, OK, what's the current status here? So we're asking for it, and it's going out, and it's querying the queue. It says the queue length is zero. That's because we just processed everything in the queue.
Right.
And you see there's a whole load of errors and warnings and things being counted up. I've been running these things for a long time to test and so on. So much more than we're just seeing today. So you can work independently is the point here. Mm-hmm. That analyzer just analyzed the new output with the cloud cover is really message in it and so on. So the next stage after that is how do you actually deploy the application? We're running individual containers here. And deploying an application is more than just running individual containers. You want to define what the application looks like as a whole. So I will switch back to the slides for a moment. And just look at some diagrams. So this is what we want to do in a production environment. If we really were working together as developers, we would probably want to be pushing our latest code up into a dev cluster where we know we're running against the latest approved code of one another. And that could happen automatically through a CI/CD system. And so that's what this looks like here. You're running locally in the top left-hand corner, which is what we've been doing. But what we want to do is push to some remote place, some shared place between all of us. The problem is when you start moving into production, you actually want a, more than just a shared place that we're all working. You want a high availability. You want geographic distribution. You want scalability, et cetera. So you've got many instances of these hosts that you want to run things on. And it starts to get really complicated now, because where are these containers running? Which ones are running where? What happens when one of those machines goes down, et cetera? And we really need to simplify that complexity. It's great to use it in dev test the way that we are doing here, but in production, you've got to manage that production workload and you've got to make sure that it works well. And that's where the Azure Container Service comes in. But we're building on top of the open source tooling with our partners, Docker and Mesosphere, in order to deliver the Azure Container Service. So let's look at Docker's solution first. Docker provides this thing called Docker Swarm, which is this single endpoint in the top left-hand corner of our cloud infrastructure here. And what that does is it allows us to run the same kind of commands that we've been running now against a single endpoint, which will then orchestrate the containers across our different parts of the infrastructure geographically.
So instead of saying, like, hey, run this on this machine, you'll run the same command, but it'll go to Swarm, and then Swarm will handle basically doing the same sort of stuff on all these other different...
Exactly. It'll spread the workload across the machines. If you put rules in it that you need at least one instance of each of these in each geographic region, you know, those kind of constraints that you would imagine in a production environment. And Swarm will handle that for you. So in pictorial form, if we think of we've got two different applications we want to run, we run those commands, and the orchestrator does exactly as you said. It decides where it's going to run and makes it run on that device. Now, you'll notice that we also have Apache Mesos on this slide. Apache Mesos is another orchestrator that you can use in the container service. The container service is in preview. I should mention that at the moment. We've been in preview since just before Christmas. It's in private preview right now. We will be moving to public preview very soon. And so you'll be able to get access to that very, very soon. And in the container service, you get to choose either Docker Swarm as your orchestrator or Apache Mesos with a project, a framework called Marathon and another one called Kronos on top. But they do essentially the same job in slightly different ways. Docker Swarm is Docker native. It's grown up in the Docker environment. It's much newer than Apache Mesos and brings with it the both the benefits and the drawbacks of being newer. It's not been as well tested in production environments. Mesos grew up in the big data world with projects like Hadoop and Spark and those kinds of frameworks, and does a good job in the container space as well. It's much more mature, has been proven in production. It's used in companies like Twitter and Airbnb and places like that at very large scale. So, you know, there's advantages and disadvantages to each. So we offer the choice, and we'll work with you to make sure that we support the right choice for you. One of the great things about this in production is what happens if a machine goes down. So in this one, we've lost a machine in the top right-hand side there. There's a cross appeared. It's gone down for whatever reason. So the orchestrator says, oh, these containers are no longer working for us. They're inaccessible. So we'll move this one over here. We have some spare resources over here, and we'll move that one over there. And so it's there's an element of self-healing when you have these orchestrators in there.
Okay.
And this is what the container service does for us. So let's just switch back to the demo machine again. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to tell this machine to actually talk to a Swarm cluster that I've previously created on Azure. So I'm going to set this environment variable called Docker host, and I'm going to set it to the port 2375. Okay. Now, in order to understand what's happening there, I need to show you that in the background, I have this SSH tunnel running. Now, if you're not familiar with SSH tunneling, what it does essentially is say, when I talk to port 2375 on my local machine, channel it through in a secure environment to this endpoint. And the endpoint is this RG ACS Swarm Management endpoint running in West US on Azure. And that's a Swarm Azure Container Service cluster.
Okay.
So that from now on, the commands I run will be on that remote cluster. So if I do Docker info, you can see on this remote cluster, I actually have two nodes. One is called dash naught at the end, one is called dash one on the end. So now I have an orchestrator, a very small cluster, but it's a cluster nevertheless. Mm-hmm. And now I can do things like docker run argardler simulate. And it looks no different, apart from in this case, I'm not going to see the output on the screen because it's happening in a remote cloud. There are ways of getting to that. We won't go into that now. But that's just run exactly the same thing. And if I go back to Slack, you'll see we've not got the cloud cover here. And the reason for that is the version that is on the Swarm cluster is our production version.
Right.
It's the one that we want to have there. So you can see that it's actually a different one that ran because it has a different message coming out of it. But we said we wanted to run the whole application. And we don't really want to have to run each container individually.
Mm-hmm. But before you go, so
yes.
When you do this Docker run, so the Docker Swarm will decide which machine this container will be run on.
Correct. Let's have a look at which machine it ran on. It will have stopped at the moment. So I need to do minus A. And if I also do L, it'll tell me the last machine. So I'm just going to look at the last one that ran. And so there, about 54 seconds ago, it ran on...
The zero.
Yes, at the bottom. It ran on dash zero in that particular instance. Another time, it might run on dash one.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Swarm will decide where it runs.
Cool.
So let's look at Docker Compose. And Docker Compose, I haven't mentioned what it is yet. Docker Compose is the way to define your application. I just realized I've got my storage account key. Guess who's going to be regenerating their keys soon? So what we're doing is we're saying we want to start a producer, and we're setting it up to run in a particular way. In this case, it's going to run exactly the same as before, but it's going to just run continuously instead of running five. And so it's just going to keep running. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to run an analyzer as well. Okay.
So those are two containers in this.
That's right, yes. It's the same two containers we've been looking at all along. Mm-hmm. But instead of running the Docker run for the simulate at the top here, instead of running Docker run simulate, this line here, and then separately running Docker run analyze, we're going to just run Docker compose up and then run in detached mode for the same reasons that we did before. And you'll see that it'll start both of those containers for us.
Cool.
Okay.
Great.
So I can now do... It's a little easier to read the output if I do docker compose ps, oops, but not misspell it. You can see that I have them and the status, it is wrapping still because of the size of the screen, the text, but the status is up in both cases. They're both running at the current time. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's suppose that the queue is getting too long. Scale, analyzer, oops. Let's make it have five. And now we're seeing it say, oh, I need five. I've only got one. Let's start up another five.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do the Docker Compose PS, you can see that they're up and running.
Great.
Okay.
So Docker Compose gives you this ability to deploy a complete application in one command, but also do things like scaling components up and down with those individual containers. I can do Docker Compose stop. And that's going to say, okay, I'm going to stop each of these containers now. So that will stop generating and stop logging those things. It takes a little while. It lets the work finish before just killing it. It lets the work finish and looks for, if it can, and looks for a good time to stop it. Docker Compose PS. You can see that they're still there, so I can restart them very quickly and have them start from where they left off. But they've exited. They're not actually running at this point. Okay. So going back to the Azure Container Service and what we've built with that is we're building on top of Azure and Azure Stack. We're building on top of virtual machines and virtual machine scale sets. Scale sets are a great way of scaling as well. So what we've been doing here is we've been scaling the individual containers. But if we run out of underlying hosts on which those containers are going to run, VM scale sets helps with that. It gives us ability to scale up and scale down. We are supporting Linux today because Windows Server containers are not available just yet. They are in TP4 and onwards, and you can run Windows Server containers, but they're not GA yet, so we're not running them in Azure Container Service right now, but obviously we will be doing, they will be coming. We use the standard container technologies. We're using the standard open source code here. We're working with partners like Docker and Mesosphere to make sure that everything runs well on Azure. We're contributing upstream to these projects to make sure that everything runs well. And that gives you the ability to use whatever tooling you want. Mm. You're not limited to the tooling we say is appropriate. You're only limited to the tooling that the broader community, including Microsoft, provides. In order to define the actual infrastructure you run on, we use Azure Resource Manager templates. So this is a declarative way of defining the infrastructure. And what we're doing with the Azure Container Service is we're taking those popular first and third party tooling. So Swarm and Mesos are the things that we've talked about, but there's a lot of other components in there to make it as easy as possible to stand up your cluster. Okay. We're doing this in a very layered way, and the reason we're doing that is because this is an area of rapid innovation right now. And honestly, we don't know what's coming in the near future. Things are changing on a day-to-day basis. And so we've tried to design this in a very layered way so that we can slot different components in. And an example of that is being able to slot in Swarm or slot in Mesos. Same thing that we're doing with the monitoring, for example. We have support for OMS, the Operational Management Suite right now in preview form. But we also want to introduce App Insights. We also want to introduce third-party tooling and monitoring solutions in there. And in the future, we'll look at other layers as well, things like networking and things like storage and so on. Mm-hmm. What you get when you stand this up looks like this. On the right-hand side, you have your cluster. So those are the Swarm. We saw the Swarm 0 and Swarm 1. Those are in that cluster on the right-hand side. We put a load balancer in front of there so you can access any applications that need net access. The piece on the left is the masters. That's where all of the orchestration software lives. That's where the brains of the of the cluster live. And you connect it through an SSH port in the way that we showed you. We tunneled through SSH to talk to it. Today, you do have a jump box as well. That's a machine that executes inside of this availability set, inside of this virtual network, and it gives you direct access to all of those machines. That's going away. We've managed to route around that, take that complexity away. So very soon, we'll be removing that, and there'll be what's called a reverse proxy that will provide the same kind of functionality that we have there.
Great.
So to deploy it, you can, of course, use the portal. On the right-hand side, you see the ARM template that would stand all this up. Now, it's important to point out that in order to stand up, say, a Mesos cluster, it's something like 5,000 lines of configuration code and a lot of person months, maybe even years, in fine-tuning that Absolutely. And making it run really, really well. What you need to do as a customer on Azure is just those tens of lines of configuration code. You basically give it things like, what's your DNS name, how many masters do you want, how many agents do you want, and what SSH key you want to use, things like that. Mm-hmm. And we do the rest. It all happens behind the scenes. We stand it all up for you. You still have access to all of those IaaS machines. You can still do things with them if you want to, or you can just leave it as an endpoint, as a container service endpoint where you can scale up and scale down using scale sets, etc. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible to stand this up, but we are only using open source components within there. So you can take the same infrastructure that we're building and make it available on any other environment. So we're going to give it you in Azure Stack, we're going to give it you in Azure, but if you wanted to use the same configuration in your developer machine, you can do. Even another cloud if you really want to. Not sure why, but... So we've already looked at the Swarm cluster and how that works, so I'll skip over those two. And the last thing that I want to show is the auto-scaling. I promised to show you an auto-scale thing. And so this is auto-scaling of the actual application, not of the underlying infrastructure. It's just the application itself. And I've written a little script that has some simple auto-scale logic in it.
Okay.
So what we're doing here is it's using Docker Compose, and it's standing up three analyzers and one producer. Okay, and you can see that they've started up there. So if I hit the key now, every 5 seconds, it's just going to show us what's happening to the queue. So we can see the queue length is approximately 425, and we still have all of the analyzers up and running. Now, with this number of analyzers, that number should keep going up. Right? Mm-hmm. It's carefully measured by me to make sure the number goes up. We need to scale up. There's no auto-scale algorithm in place right now, and so it's just going to keep going up and keep growing. We're up to 482, and it will keep going if I let it continue, but in a moment it's going to say, okay, do you want to turn on the auto-scale algorithm? So I am. Now, this algorithm is written into my application. It's not something that comes as part of Azure Container Service. I decide what the algorithm is for my application. And my algorithm here is quite simply, if the queue length is over 50, you need more analyzers. And so it fires up to 10 analyzers. Unfortunately, it's scrolling off the screen. Let me see if I can reduce the size. It's not going to let me reduce the size because I'm not in interactive mode. But you see, it flew past there. It said that the queue length is 244. Mm-hmm. Actually, what I can do is just go back to Slack, because you'll see the same messages coming in on Slack, I think. Well, unfortunately, we won't. So I'll have to switch back to there. But if we watch it there, 25, we're below. And you can see some of them have exited.
Yep.
So the queue is not too long now. So it's killed some of those containers. And now it's up to 50, which is just on the cusp. So the next one, it's going to be too high. And you'll see that we'll start up some new containers again.
So now, is your auto-scaling algorithm, is this something that's, you know, matched up with whether you're doing Swarm or Mesos? Or?
So this is just a bash script that calls the queue, says how long is the queue, and if it's too long, it stands up some more containers.
Okay.
So it's a very, very simplistic algorithm
right.
here.
Okay.
And it's written by me in my application. It's not part of Swarm. I'm using Swarm in order to do this.
Right.
In this case, I could be doing the same thing with Mesos.
Gotcha.
You can write it into the framework itself as well. There are mechanisms that you can do that.
Okay.
But I wanted to show that you can do something that's entirely portable. So this is written into my application. I can take this and run it in any environment, and it will behave in exactly the same way.
Great.
And you can see they've just come up again, and we've finished the execution. So if you were watching as it was scrolling by, you saw that they were coming up and going down depending on the length
right.
of the queue.
Very cool.
So that's the set of demos. I do have one more demo if you want to look at it, but I think we're getting a bit short of time.
Is this something that's available online?
It is available online. So let's put a link down somewhere.
Well, can you explain what the demo is so that we know?
Yeah, so the other demo is using Apache Mesos instead of using Swarm. So to show what the differences are there, Apache Mesos provides a UI, so you can do all the scaling up and everything using the UI. You can also do it using a REST API, and so I demonstrate that UI. But I also demonstrate a continuous integration and continuous delivery mechanism. So when we do the edit, like we did right at the beginning of this session, we push it into GitHub. A continuous integration system finds those changes, does some tests on it, rebuilds it, and pushes it out into production. So in about a 5-minute video that we can link to, you'll see an edit being made, some tests being run, and automatically deployed into the staging environment. And you'll also see Apache Mesos instead of Swarm.
Very cool. So now I imagine when we do release public preview, that'll be announced on the Azure blog, so people can just stay tuned to that to see when it's out there.
Yeah,
great.
Absolutely.
And then where can people go for more information if it's out there now? Or
so the page with the video in will have a link to a whole load of other information.
Oh, fantastic.
As well.
Excellent. And can people reach out to you on Twitter, for example?
Absolutely they can. Let's put it up on the screen, or you can do it
If you just give us one of these, we'll actually insert it in the video, yeah.
At R. Gardler.
Perfect. Well, we'll get that inserted for you. Excellent.
I've always waited to do that. Can you do it again?
Yeah, sure.
At R. Gardler.
Perfect. Perfect. It'll say R. Gardler both times, I swear.
Excellent.
Good. Well, Ross, thanks for coming on. Thanks for showing us Azure Service Container. I'm excited for this to come out and see what people are doing with
it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you. Everybody out there, make sure to follow us at Cloud Cover Show, and we will see you next time.
See you.